qualifying and life member of the MDRT, which puts him in the top 2% of all financial advisors in the world. He has spoken at the MDRT at Top of the Table. He's spoken on over 10 countries around the world as well. He is the author of 2 books, and the thing I like most is he's the owner of a Harley Davidson. The only thing Corey wants to do today is share with us something that we will never forget. So please welcome Corey Collins.
Well, good morning. Can you hear me? No? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good, too bad. Well, I'll tell you, as that speech was going on, I was thinking, I really feel bad for the person who's speaking behind him, and then I realized it was me after I was taking some notes here. But, Troy was talking about service, and I was thinking about a story with one of my clients. I had a client who was blind, and I sold him a life insurance policy, and I wanted to do something good for him, so I went to the CNIB, which is the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, and I had them type up a braille page, and we had it attached to the front of the policy, and it had his name, and it had the policy number, and it had my phone number, and it had my name, and this client happened to have 2 policies, one from me and one from another company, and things changed in his life, and unfortunately, he had to cancel one of the policies. And do you know which one he canceled? Mine. It was the only one he could find. I'm happy to be here. When I arrived, Kent Binning picked me up at the airport, and I haven't seen Kent in 25 years. He and I used to work in Canada at London Life, and we're at the home office, and I haven't seen him in 25 years, and he stepped out of the car, and he didn't look the same except for his hair color. I don't know if you can see in this light, but I have gray hair as well now. And they say to be successful in this business, you need to have gray hair and hemorrhoids. The gray hair makes you look mature, and the hemorrhoids make you look concerned. I consider myself to be half successful. And I apologize, last night I really didn't get much sleep in the hotel. I went to bed early enough, but a fella around 1 o'clock in the morning was banging on the door and using his key and trying to get into the room. And I got up and I opened up the door, and obviously he had been drinking, and he thought it was his room, and I explained, and he left. About 1:30, he came back knocking on the door using his key again, and I went out to the door and again once more explained that it was my room, not his, and he left. But then about 3 o'clock in the morning, he knocked on the door again and tried to get back in. And I opened up the door and I looked at him and he looked at me, and with his glassy eyes, he said, "Did you rent every room?" But it is an honor for me to be here today. I am from Halifax, Nova Scotia, as you heard in the introduction. Halifax and Salt Lake City are separated by 4,838 kilometers. And for those of you who need the conversion with the kilometer to mile conversion, it is 3,006 miles away from home, or as we say at home, it's really wicked far away. When I drive to work, I drive along the Bedford Highway, which winds around the Bedford Basin and opens up into the Atlantic Ocean, and there's a salt breeze that I sniff every morning as I go into work. And we're known for lobster, and we're known for seaside towns, and we are known for lighthouses. But one thing that we have in common is that when we get to work, you and I, we're in this beautiful business called the insurance business, and we all have products that we know that our clients need, and it helps them today, and it will help them for generations from today. Their children and their children's children will benefit from the work that we do. But I had a call from John Homer many, many months ago as you were putting this meeting together, and one of John's first questions, he said, "Corey, do you believe in free speech?" And I said, "I do." And he said, "Good, then can you come here to Utah and give us one?" I'm serious when I say that I'm proud to accept the speech to be with you today. But I must tell you that there was something special that came over me when I was asked to be here, and I still can't explain it, and I don't know what it is, but I feel blessed to be here in front of you. So on behalf of the Million Dollar Roundtable, and with my first trip to Utah, it's all my pleasure. So thank you for the invite, and I hope that the next 50 minutes that we spend together is worth it. You know, I know that many of you in this room know each other. I don't know you. But if we can maybe have a little exercise to quickly get to know you just a little bit better, and if you could be quiet when you do this, if I could have each one of you turn and maybe face for a moment quietly, if you could face the person sitting beside you just for a moment, go ahead. Look at them straight in the eyes. Now go ahead, just give them a great big kiss on the lips. You know, what I want to talk to you about today is living your life every day. You see, at the Million Dollar Roundtable meeting in Toronto a number of years ago, there was a gentleman by the name of Patrick Henry Hughes, and he was a blind and disabled piano player. You don't have to have sight to have vision. And what insight he had, and with the dedicated work that each one of you do with your clients in the homes and the boardrooms around Utah, we don't give people sight, but we do help them focus their vision on tomorrow. We help our clients understand that the time is now to act on what is important, because people don't want to buy insurance, and people don't want to buy the investment products either, but rather what they want is what our products do for them. They want family strength and the comfort in the fact that things will be okay no matter what, and it's our job to help our clients understand that the time is now to love our families and to live our lives and to protect their dreams. So please, give yourself a round of applause for what it is that you do every day when you go to work. You know, through my work with the Million Dollar Roundtable, I've met some wonderful people, and one such person is a gentleman by the name of Steve Donahue from Victoria, Canada. And Steve wrote a book which is called Shifting Sands. And in the book, he talks about how he crossed the Sahara Desert. And in the desert, he said, a road can be there today and literally gone tomorrow. And his point is that in life, you need to follow maybe your compass and not necessarily a roadmap. You see, this world is changing so fast that if we followed a roadmap that we set for ourselves even just a few years ago, we would be in a totally different place than we are today. And I think that my compass has led me to places that I would have never have seen if I had stuck to my original roadmap only. And for example, if I had not become sick a number of years ago, I may never have met any of you. But for me, it all came down to one moment in time. It was not when I woke from the coma. It was the moment that I woke from the coma and I asked, why am I here? So here's a question for you to ask yourself. Why are you here? Not just in this room, but why are you here? Why have you made the decisions that you've made in life and in business? And for today, what will you take home from this meeting? Not necessarily in your notebook, but in your heart. You see, today, I want to talk to you about living life every day. And if truth be known, it feels a little unsettling delivering this talk to you right now. You see, as I prepared many of my notes for today, I relive much of my own life support story, and I feel the same thoughts that I felt rushing to me when I came out of the coma. You see, our memory recall is quite vivid, and I used to think that when people would relive their childhood issues maybe 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, that it was a bunch of fluff. But as I get these feelings rushing back to me now, I do know that they're quite real. And my point, however, is that you never know what's around the corner, and you need to spend some time and think about why you are really here and what you might want to do with the rest of the time that you have left on this earth. My wife Susan has asked me several times to do something for her. She wanted me to write my obituary. And it's a true story, not in how people will remember you, but an obituary is really how you think you're seen. Now, I'm not expecting that I'm going to die unexpectedly anytime soon, but I wrote one. And have you ever tried to read an obituary? They usually start with, "He died suddenly," or "She died peacefully at home." And I believe that funerals are referred to as being a celebration of life. So why shouldn't an obituary be a pre-scripted thing which is more like the person who really died? So for my wife, here is my self-written obituary. And I should tell you that as I prepared this, I chuckled because in my mind I can hear the words from the Monty Python movie in the Holy Grail, in which the knight who's being chopped to pieces says to his attacker, "I'm not quite dead yet." So here it is. "Last night was a sad night for us, yet it must have been a glorious day for heaven. Corey Collins left our lives better than we would have been if we had never met him. Today, he is placing smiles on the faces of angels and on the faces of the souls that have gone before him. Here on earth, he leaves a legacy of friends and family and clients who were all much better for knowing him. His children, John, Cassandra, and Miranda, are loving, caring people who all carry his blood. His wife, Susan, was the love of his life. He often said, if heaven has a stage, I hope that they have a PowerPoint so I can share my family with everyone. He was known in countries around the world. He was liked by audiences of several languages. He was an instrument of joy in our lives. He was not known by police. He was understood by his family. He was loved by people. He drove a Harley Davidson. He sold the glue that keeps families together, and he ate the bread of life, and often too much of it. He will not be missed because he will not be forgotten. He will be remembered for as long as you live life every day. He will be happy for as long as you give away all of your love. So please, send flowers, but not to us. Send them to your own family with these words: live life every day." When Susan heard this, she was surprised to see that the dates and the committees and the associations were not mentioned. But to me, that's not what's important. When I showed my mother, she said, "Where's my name?" As I prepared this talk, I wanted to be sure that I was able to deliver a message that you will never forget. And in doing so, I was reminded of the Chinese proverb that says, "Vision without action is a daydream, and action without vision is a disaster." And my vision for you today is that, again, you will learn to live life every day. But right now, for me, I'm just happy to be here in front of you in Utah. As I prepared for this meeting, it made me stop and think about a lot of things. And I was asked to speak here today because I have lived through what it is we sell. My life has changed, not in one big way, but it has changed in a million small ways. I remember sitting in the hospital bed looking at my friends and neighbors who came and visited, and everyone was saying, "You gave us a scare. And how are you feeling now? You look like a bag of crap." And then they said, "Do you look at life differently now?" And I remember thinking to myself, do I look at life different? So why is it that people think that we need to be hit with a big bag of hammers before we can look at life differently? Today, I suppose my message runs deep. Psychologist Patrice Berry once said something at the Million Dollar Roundtable that made a lot of sense to me. She said, "When you walk with purpose, you collide with destiny." And I hope that through my story and with the words from Dr. Berry, that my message of life support can be heard loud and clear. A funeral is a time for reflection. And a friend of the family's had passed away some time ago, and at the funeral, the priest said that Bruce came to church often enough to be recognized, but not often enough to be counted on. Now, of course, he was speaking in a lighthearted way about Bruce's absence from church dinners and bingos, but the question remains, can your friends and your families and your clients, can they count on you, or do they just recognize you as you walk down the streets in your own hometown? My hope is that you might hear or see something at this meeting that will help your neighbors and your friends and your families to count on you, and again, not just to recognize you as you walk down the street. You know, it's been said that if two people have a dollar and they both trade dollars, when they trade dollars, they both walk away with a single dollar. But if both people had an idea and they traded ideas, then they both walk away with two ideas. And this is what this program is all about. And this is what the Million Dollar Roundtable is all about, sharing lessons and sharing ideas. Because this meeting is a place where visitors from around Utah can come to this symposium and share their ideas in the hope that you will go home with these ideas to help every person that you touch. And our success really depends on your ability to listen. When I came out of the coma, I had a tube which was inserted in my mouth. It led to my failed lungs. My mouth was taped closed. I couldn't say a word. I could tell that I was in the hospital and I was trying to piece things together. And whenever anyone tried to talk to me, I couldn't ask any questions. I couldn't speak. I had to learn by listening. And by listening, we can learn almost anything to help us understand. And listening gives us wisdom. Now, you don't need to look too far to find words of wisdom. And take, for example, the words in the Cinderella song. They say, "A dream is a wish your heart makes when you're fast asleep." It's a song so simple, yet it touches our very core. So what does your heart wish for when you're fast asleep? Think about when you were a kid, making wishes, listening to your heart, and following your dreams. Maybe you wanted to be a fireman or a princess. Or maybe you dreamed about flying and saving the world. And you know, I think that it's come full circle because this is what we do today. But what about the person who's sitting beside you right now? What do you think their heart is saying? What are your dreams and what are your aspirations? Remember, when you walk with purpose, you collide with destiny. And you listen to your heart and you will find your destiny. I remind myself of an expression, a philosophy that I live by. I work hard for money. I work harder for the things that money will buy, but I work hardest for the things that money cannot buy, like love and liberty and freedom and family. It's things like the time off to do the things that you want. And it's a chance to raise our kids in a positive atmosphere, and it's a chance to be a hero for somebody who simply needs you. You see, I do believe in what I do. My grandfather died at the age of 41 from a heart attack. My father had his first heart attack at the age of 38. And I said to my doctor, I think I should lose 10 pounds so I won't have a heart attack. And he said, "Corey, if you lose 10 pounds, it just means you're going to be skinny when you have yours." I'm looking for a new doctor. Until they found a blockage in my heart and gave me a stent. You know, separately from my heart condition, I did get sick, but I did get better. And since then, things have become very clear for me. It's not that my world has changed dramatically. I just act on things with more urgency than I ever did before. When we want something, we get it. We travel more. We spend more money. I call the clients that I should have called a long time ago, and we act on the good ideas faster. You You see, I'm no different than anyone in this room, and that's why I'm comfortable saying that success really is a matter of action. Successful people do the things that unsuccessful people don't like to do. But you know, being in the living benefits business, I'd be a little remiss if I didn't give you at least one disability statistic. For many years, it was believed that most injuries occur at home, but this is no longer true. Evidence from a recent study suggests that most injuries are most likely to occur at social gatherings right after somebody hollers, "Hey, everybody, watch this." You know, it really is a special thing for me to be standing here in front of you today. Actually, it's a real pleasure being able to stand up anywhere, living and breathing, and talking to people about what it is that you love to do. And it wasn't that long ago that I was laying in the intensive care unit. I was on life support. I was in a coma. You see, little does anyone know what tomorrow will bring. When I came out of the coma, Susan was there by my side. She told me that she loved me. And I couldn't respond because I was still connected to my life support system. In part, a tube had been inserted in my lungs, leading to my failed lungs. She told me that the coma had lasted for 4.5 days. And I was confused because, as far as I knew, I had only just arrived at the hospital. And as I looked around, I realized that I was not in a normal room. I was in the intensive care unit. I had more tubes in me than I want to recall. My arms and my legs were still tied to the bed. And normally I like that. By definition, life support means anything that creates a viable environment under conditions otherwise incompatible with life. But you know, when you think about it, that is what our business is all about. You create a viable environment for conditions otherwise incompatible with life. And it's the methods and the equipment or the dollars needed to sustain somebody's life or lifestyle. You know, when you walk with purpose, you collide with destiny. Well, in my experience, there's nothing in this world that gives you more purpose than waking up from a coma to live another day. See, I believe that there's 4 ways that prayers are answered. No, not yet. No, I love you too much. Yes, I thought you'd never ask. And yes, and here's more. And my family's prayers were all answered. The fact that I am alive is wonderful. The fact that I can walk and talk surprised everyone, including my doctors. You see, Sue and I, as I said, have 3 kids, John, Cassandra, and Miranda. And we have a lot of fun together, and as the kids are getting older, we can look back and we can think about the memories that we've built together. Because memories should last a lifetime. Memories about your kids and your families are forever. A client of mine had a brain aneurysm, and now he can't remember how to do a lot of things. Simple things like playing cards with his kids or making change at the store that he used to work. But I do think that we all need a little bit of life support of our own. I saw an advertisement once for an investment firm. It had a picture of a grand piano in the corner of a large ballroom. The room had a hardwood floor and the sun was shining through the window, bouncing off the piano, and no one was playing and the seat was empty and you could hear the silence. And above the piano, there's a caption which read, "I decided not to learn how to play the piano because it takes 10 years to learn how to play it well." And then it said, "Ironically, I made that decision 10 years ago." You see, many of us don't do the things that we know that we need to do to be successful. We know what it takes to be successful: preparation, making every second count, setting your priorities, making a good first impression, and never give up, And always, always keep your humor. Which reminds me of a story. Morris, an 82-year-old man, went to the doctor's for a physical. And a few days later, the doctor saw Morris walking down the street with a gorgeous young lady. And the doctor looked at him and he said, "You're doing well, aren't you, Morris?" And Morris replied, "I'm just doing what you said, Doc. Get a hot mama and be cheerful." And the doctor said, "I didn't say that. I said, you have a heart murmur. Be careful." So imagine yourself and your beautiful wife or your husband and your kids in 20 years from now. What are your goals and what are your aspirations? Imagine how easy your dreams can be crushed, for the bank to take your home, for your kids to become disillusioned, for your relationships to succumb to pressure, and all it takes is maybe one cell of cancer, or two missed heartbeats, or 3 minutes without oxygen, or maybe 4 days in a coma, and the will of God to make the difference between mortality and morbidity, the difference between death and disability. Yet I believe that we people are like tea bags. We don't know our own strength until we get in hot water. A couple of years ago, Sue and I were traveling outside of Halifax, and we were in two cars. And we were on our way to see our then 17-year-old daughter, Miranda, who was attending Bible camp. And we planned on giving Miranda one of the cars, and then Sue and I would drive to the neighboring province, New Brunswick, to play golf with friends. Susan was traveling at 65 miles an hour, and I was traveling directly behind her in my car. And a third car was parked on the right side of the highway in the gravel on the shoulder, and this car, however, began to move. And without warning, it made a direct beeline across the highway in an attempt to get to the emergency connector lane between the two divided highways. When he did this, a bit oblivious to traffic, he drove directly into the path of Susan's car. Susan had no warning. And I know this because the skid mark was 18 inches long before she collided with the other vehicle at a speed of 65 miles an hour. And I was in my car directly behind. As if in slow motion, I watched as Susan lost control of her vehicle, plowing into the other. I later thought of the song, "The Last Kiss," and I remembered the words, "the squealing tires, and busting glass." And I continued to watch as my wife and her car slid sideways down the road. Spinning too was my life, my world, my wife. I too was traveling at 65 miles an hour and braking and trying to avoid everything on the road in front of me. And eventually her car left the roadway, and I thought Susan had died. I ran to Sue's car, and I don't remember hearing anything around me. I ran towards my wife, and there she was, covered in glass, her eyes closed and her arms at her side, and then her eyes flickered. The engine had been pushed 8.5 inches towards her, and through the grace of God, Susan will make a total recovery, and her knees and her back is what gives her pain now, but we are so lucky. But today, while she suffers some pain, we are thankful because it could have been much worse. Dennis Waitley said, "You must look within for value, but you must look beyond for perspective." And my question to you is, what's on the road in front of you? Is it something that you want to avoid, or is it something that you need to face? And as for me, I should tell you the words of Mark Twain and say that the rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated. And Sue and I have been touched by many separate events. You see, Christmas And New Year's is a time of year that you should set aside to think about your business and your families, and it might be a good time to think about what you have on the inside, what you want to do for the next year, or even what you want to do for the rest of your life, for as long or as short as that is going to be. And again, I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to be alive, but better yet, I'm happy to have the opportunity to get older. And on that December the 28th, I did slip into a coma. And Susan was told that I was a very sick man. And they never use words like he's going to die or we don't think that he's going to make it. And Susan wouldn't believe it anyway. And the truth is, she never gave up. And since I woke from that coma in that January, I now know that regardless of how bad things get, if you think you're having a bad day, try missing one. And that used to be a joke of mine, but now I think about it every day. But things have changed, and we do take more time off. And we did at one point rent a Harley and drove the Pacific Coast Highway in California from Long Beach to Malibu. We drove a Harley over the Hoover Dam, and we did play the slot machines in Vegas. We bought a Harley Davidson Road King for me and a Victory Kingpin for Sue. My business has never been stronger, and we take time to smell the flowers and to photograph them. In a Reader's Digest survey, the question was asked among kids, what's the hardest job parents have to do? And among the responses, I found one that said this: the hardest thing my father has to do is to keep a promise, because if he doesn't, I won't be able to believe in him anymore. The fact remains, however, that we all need life support, and life support comes in many different forms, and for some of us it's money, and for others it's love, or peace, or time off, or religion. And sometimes life support comes from trying to keep your promise so that your kids and your clients and your spouses can continue to believe in you. I do work hard for money. I work harder for the things that money will buy, but I work hardest for the things that money cannot buy: the love of my family, a happy home, and the ability to keep a promise, even if I had gone off and died. You see, every now and then, something happens in your life that makes you stop and think. So what does it make you to stop? Some things are life-changing, and sometimes you just get a tap on the shoulder, and sometimes, well, maybe it's just a major full-body infection carried through your blood, causing septic shock, which shuts down your kidneys and causes your liver to fail and causes your heart to have ectopic beats and places you on life support and put you in a coma. Believe me, I'd much rather have a tap on the shoulder, but I didn't. Which brings me to 6 life lessons. Prepare yourself for whatever you think will happen, and especially for the things that you don't think will happen, because you never know what might happen. And if you're not prepared, you will lose and your family will lose. And when the finger pointing is all but done, the suffering will go on. You see, Christmas Day was busy around our house, 25 people for dinner and presents under the tree and a 32-pound turkey in the oven and food in the fridge and more food in the freezer. And lots of leftovers, just the way that Christmas is supposed to be. And Susan and I go out of our way to make every Christmas memorable. And sometimes we overdo it, but we never regret it. And everyone enjoys it. And while most people continued to enjoy the holidays that year, I had a different road to follow. December the 27th, I woke up with severe chills and flu-like symptoms, and I spent the day in bed, drinking Neocitrin and waiting for this to pass, but things didn't get better, and instead of getting better, things got worse. And less than 36 hours from the onset of what I thought was the flu, I arrived at the emergency department to find a lineup of close to 200 people in front of me, and some had waited for up to 12 hours to see a doctor, and I walked into the emergency room, crippled over in pain, trying to hold myself up. The triage nurse took my blood pressure several times before calling a second person and then a third person to be sure that it was right. My blood pressure was 79 over 37 and dropping. And I didn't know it then, but I've since learned that my expected chances of death on that day was at least 95%. I was placed in a wheelchair as everyone was wondering how I was still standing. And within 10 minutes, I became patient number one with the attention of everyone. I always wanted to be number one. But this night, when I jumped the line to become the most critical person in the emergency room, it was not the way that I wanted it to happen. And among the problems, it was noted that I was in a state called DIC, disseminated endovascular coagulation. And this is when you lose all clotting factors and you start to bleed internally and eventually externally, and death is not far off. A client of mine recently told me that they secretly call it DIC, and death is coming. Life support lesson number 5, make every second count. You see, the decision to go to the hospital saved my life. When we decided to make the drive to the hospital, I thought I had the flu. And although the major back pain was now becoming a major factor, I was told later that if I had not arrived at the hospital in less than an hour, I would have died. And Susan had suggested going to the hospital earlier that day, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to bother. But eventually my pain passed my own tolerance, so we drove in. And I'm told that my life would have ended in less than 60 minutes if I had stayed home. Put another way, I had less than 3,600 seconds to live. Too late to buy insurance. Too late to change a will. Too late to do anything. And when we left the house, we told the kids that it might be busy, so it might take a while. But every decision you make will affect your life in one way or another. Some decisions are more rewarding and some decisions are less, but every decision and every second counts. In life, you have to take advantage of the time that you have, and like I in the emergency room, time was all I had. Someone once told me that yesterday is a canceled check, tomorrow is a promissory note, and today is the only legal tender you have, and we must spend it wisely. We need to tell your family that you love them every day. Let your kids know that you're proud of them every day, and keep your promises and enjoy life. See, each one of us has our own timepiece all set to go off at different times. And I didn't know how sick I was until I got better. It was rougher on my family than it was on me, but I was lucky because I had someone to love me. And Mr. Murphy in the bed beside me lay there dying and nobody came to visit. Which brings us to life support lesson number 4. Set your priorities and know what they are. When we drove to the hospital, I had slipped on a pair of sweatpants and a t-shirt because dressing for success was not high on my priority list on that day. And we decided to go to the QE2 hospital and not the Cobequid, which was a smaller, closer hospital because of the stories told to me by my many doctor clients, even for the small things. And we figured it right because this was a decision that helped me save my life. Has your mother ever told you to wear clean underwear in case you have to go to the hospital? Well, I was sitting in a wheelchair waiting for the doctor, and one lung was completely full of pneumonia and the second lung was 3/4 full. My 3,600 seconds were ticking away and I couldn't breathe and the pain was becoming more intense, and I was asked to spit into a tube for testing, and one small sample is all that I could give, and now it was full of blood. The internal bleeding had started. My sense of awareness was starting to dim as I failed to recognize that this was not normal. As I was trying to breathe, I leaned over to Sue and I told her the most important thing that I could think of. And I said, when I put on my sweatpants, I forgot to put on my underwear. You see, as in life, what we sometimes think is a priority is only a minor thing when we look at the big picture. And by this time, her son John arrived at the hospital with an overnight bag, underwear included, and I thought my biggest worry was over. which brings us to life support lesson number 3. Create a good first impression. And after I came out of the coma, Susan met one of the doctors at Tim Hortons, a coffee shop, when she was getting a coffee. And he told her that he would remember me for the rest of his career. And Sue thought it was because of the complicated case or the fact that I lived or something like that, but it wasn't. He said that he would remember me because for as sick as I was and with all the needles and the x-rays and the blood test and the swab samples and the exams and the flurry of activity in the emergency room, and while I was in such extreme pain, he said that he would remember me because I said thank you to every person who touched me. He said for all that was going on, I was the most polite patient that he had ever seen. He said that I kept my composure when most people would lose it. But I think it was just my sales training. Life support lesson number 2, never give up. The drug which I received eventually saved my life, and it's called activated protein C. It's a drug which at the time cost over $20,000 every time they prescribe it. It's an immune system booster which reverses the effects of multiple organ shutdown, and one of the criteria to receive this drug is that death will result without it. One of the side effects or the risks of activated protein C is brain hemorrhage and stomach bleeding. And for me, the biggest risk was not taking it. The drug had only been available in Canada for about a year at that time, and it was on trial, and the Cobequid Hospital, that smaller hospital, did not have it. Which means that if we had taken a left instead of a right, I would have died. With every day that a person's in a coma, the risk of complication is great and continues to get greater. The longer the coma, the greater the difficulty of rehab will be. And Susan was told that if I lived, to be prepared for home care and dialysis and wheelchairs. At one point, Susan was told that I would require open heart surgery to clear the infection of a heart valve. People prayed. And Susan was told that there was nothing more that they could do. She was told that she was the best medicine for me at that point. I was on life support and I was in a coma. My liver had failed. I had a heart infection. My lungs could not inhale or exhale without a machine attached to me. The urine bag attached to the side of my bed was a mixture of blood and urine, a reminder that my kidneys had both failed. My heart would spontaneously race and miss beats. I was watched for the signs of brain hemorrhage. I was not responding to internal or external stimuli. My hands and my fingers were swollen like sausages. They had forgotten to take off my wedding ring and thought about cutting the ring off before it cut a finger off. But I can't take credit for my survival, but Susan knew that I would be okay when for a moment she was at my side and I moved my left hand and tears came out of my closed eyes. Sir Winston Churchill said never give up, and neither Susan nor I nor God ever gave up. And it's a good feeling when you come out of a coma and you're taken off life support and the ICU doctors and the nurses are standing there clapping and waving to you through the isolation windows, because 5 days earlier they stood there and they watched me, and in their experience they knew that I was going to die. If you think you're having a bad day, try missing 5. And tests now confirm that there is no residual of the virus which got into me. All organs have returned to normal function, and there is no sign that I have ever been sick. When I returned to the floor, I was told that I could go home once I could walk without the aid of the oxygen tank, and I forced myself to get better, and there I was, white face and a white housecoat, 18 pounds lighter, and in one hand was the oxygen tank on wheels, and the other hand slid along the handrail supporting me as I shuffled down the hall, and I looked up and I saw one of my best clients. And as shocked to see me as I was to see him, he looked at me and he said, "Corey, what are you doing?" And I said, "Prospecting." My friends called and said that I would do anything to lose weight over New Year's. Others called and suggested maybe I was just gathering material for yet another speech. I called my doctor and I asked him if it mattered where I lay down, and he said no, and I said good, because I said I want to lay down on the beach in Florida, and we did. Which brings us to life support lesson number one. Keep the faith. Today, the only lasting physical reminder that I was ever sick is a small scar on my neck. It's where an intravenous lifeline had been inserted. It was a direct path to my heart to inject drugs. And it was my backup, and it was my insurance in case of a code blue. And now people ask me how my life has changed. And I'm still working on the answer, but I think about it every day, especially as I drive down the highway on the Harley-Davidson Road King with the wind in my face. I have a second chance. I don't know why. I don't know how, but I have a second chance. I don't know why I was placed on this earth. None of us do. Maybe we're here to teach a child right from wrong, or maybe we're here to teach somebody how to love. Or maybe we're here for the purpose to come to this symposium to learn and to teach so that we can better advise our clients, our friends, our family. And maybe you have already done what you're supposed to do, and maybe you're here just to enjoy the rest of your time in peace. I don't know. But if I were to offer any advice, in my humble opinion, it would be this. Live life every day, take care of your health, and give away all of your life, of your love. But for the CE credits, if you're looking for some business advice, live life every day, take care of your health, and give away all of your love. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, and God bless.